See? Now that's how you close a show.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 378, recorded on February 19th, 2015.
Welcome to the 378th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 211th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am John Falcon.
And I'm Hillary Goldstein.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and often includes other fun stuff.
Yeah, we're not having a gaming flashback or gaming history this week.
No fun stuff for you today. You've all been bad.
Yeah, well, you know, the problem is that we had to sort of skip a podcast due to a lot of things going on, and it kept on getting delayed and delayed. And oddly enough, it got delayed into next week. And I actually had to push up this episode because I'm going to be gone for the weekend. So fortunately, I got everybody together. As promised, we have our guest host, Hillary Goldstein, formerly of IGN. It is formerly of IGN,
hello.
Right?
I am formerly of IGN.
Right, okay.
Jonah, I have a question, though. Where are you going this weekend?
I'm going to Connecticut. It's nothing special. Of course, in 2 weeks, I'll be going to PAX East.
Are you going to Foxwoods when you go to Connecticut?
Ooh, with the giant champagne glass hot tub?
No.
That's the only thing I know about Connecticut.
Unfortunately, no. I'm going to Milford just to visit a friend, and it's just to get away from the city, basically. Nothing much more than that. I mean,
a friend or a quote-unquote friend?
Stop.
An air quotes friend.
No, an actual friend.
Well, I don't want to entice you to go gamble, but I will say that I went to Foxwoods on my birthday once, and I won $1,300 on slot machines. So
nice.
I'm just saying it could happen to anybody.
Yeah. Well, my game is 21 or blackjack. I don't do the slots much. Although my friend back in L.A., when he goes to New Orleans and he wins $500 on one sitting. It's just like some people have magic hands. You know, they just pull the handle and boom, you win.
Yes.
They have slots all over the place in New Orleans too. Anyways, so normally, like I said, we have a gaming flashback, gaming history. We're not doing it this week. Hillary also has his own podcast, which has just started, and it is actually a board game podcast, dogandthimble.com. Hillary, do you want to, you know, do the old shilling for it?
I think you did an amazing job of it. It is the worst tabletop podcast you could ever listen to. We don't know what we're talking about, and most of the time we're just cursing at each other and sounding like idiots. So if that appeals to you, then I think you're going to love it.
Well,
but
wasn't that the IGN podcast anyway? I mean,
well, but I think the thing that you have to understand is that the IGN podcast was that way because I'm just terrible at podcasts. So
yeah.
if you want to enjoy how terrible I am at podcasts, it's like any kind of gaming podcast that you listen to, but totally focused on tabletop games. So it's just me and two of my friends. The thing is, I moved to Utah a year and a half ago. And,
well, you're working with Chair,
Utah,
right?
I was working with Chair, yeah. The makers of Infinity Blade and Shadow Complex. And I must say, so this is what I tell everybody is Utah is probably one of the best places ever to be a board gamer. Within 10 miles of my house, there are literally 10 board game stores. It's crazy how much there is tabletop gaming here. Utah is a great place for board gaming, but a terrible place to be a human being. So there's like a trade-off.
What? You don't like the Great Salt Flats? Come on. I mean, you could drive up to 800 miles an hour on that thing.
We just legalized firing squads for executions,
yeah.
So yeah, it's quite the place.
But it's quote unquote more humane.
Anyway, so me and my friends, I just met people who were gaming, and I just got way more into tabletop gaming. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. Let's make a podcast that is dumb and silly and fun, but about board games because they're cool.
Right. Well, you know, me and Paul board game. Paul, is your favorite still Shadow over Camelot?
I don't know if I ever called it my favorite.
Well, I know you were enthusiastic about it a lot of times.
Let's see. What was I playing last night? Last night I was playing Diamonds.
Oh, wait. Oh, no. See, when you say Diamonds, it makes me think of Splendor, but it's not Splendor, is it?
Well, no. I played Splendor over the weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I mean, Paul belongs to a huge gaming group there in L.A., so.
because we're awesome.
So anyways, actually, that's going to tie into the question of the week at the end of the podcast. We will discuss that later.
Because we're all awesome.
Okay. Paul is now obsessing over the Lego movie. This week's news is going to have a mix of old news and new news because, as Alexander Spolinsky was complaining on Twitter, there was basically almost no news this week. So we're just combining both weeks and, you know, I mean, they are sort of major news and we'll get some discussion out of them. But like I said, it's too early in the year to actually have anything good to talk about, really. I mean, so anyways, we're going to move on to the first news item. And Paul, take this one. It's the first one, Paul.
Rock Band DLC hints at a comeback, and this comes to us from VG247. Rock Band developer Harmonix has announced that another round of DLC for the previously dormant music game, adding to suspicions that the franchise is making a comeback. The first Rock Band DLC in over 2 years dropped last month, much to our surprise and subsequent delight. Proving it wasn't just a one-off, Harmonix has provided another batch. As of tomorrow, Tenacious D's Rise of the Phoenix and Weezer's Back to the Shack will be available for PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 for $2 or £1 or...
Don't worry about the other denominations, Paul.
Yeah, okay, for about $2 each. As ever, the tracks are compatible with both Rock Band 3 and Rock Band Blitz. Your entire DLC collection is available for both titles. The DLC itself is nice, but what intrigues us is that both titles reference a comeback of some sort. Harmonix made specific mention that tracks of the track's great titles when revealing the DLC on its blog too.
The thing is that the one thing that bothers me in Rock Band is that, you know, it wasn't really it was Activision promoting Guitar Hero so much that I think basically killed the genre for a while. And, you know, Harmonix has their new music game out. I haven't played it. The only time I ever played it was at E3, actually, their Fantasia game. So, Hillary, did you enjoy Rock Band? I forgot.
Yeah, I enjoy Guitar Hero, and then I enjoy Rock Band. And even now, still, sometimes I will go to parties, and at some point, somebody will actually break out Rock Band still. So I think it's cool. I think that the major innovation that Rock Band had, other than just having, like, hey, it's a full band instead of just guys playing guitars, was I just think the DLC music store, right? You consider there were several hundred songs, like maybe even up to 1,000. There were a lot of songs that came out over the course of a couple of years, and that's pretty incredible, especially just considering even the way the music industry works. So for them to be able to work those deals to get out the songs at a fairly affordable price, and then to actually have those carry over from multiple Rock Bands so that, you know, most of the time you would have bought stuff for like a first game and then the second game, that shit would never have transferred, right? But it did, right?
Well, you didn't have to pay a licensing fee of $5 from Rock Band 1 to Rock Band 2 with the expensive songs that didn't have licensing. And that's a little bit of a... Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say that allows you, though, to export all of the songs that were on Rock Band 2 as well. I mean, there's what game... Can you think of other game, just not a music game, but any other game that would actually allow you to transfer the entire catalog that's in the game to a sequel? Like, that just doesn't happen. So I think in that front, it's actually pretty remarkable what they offered.
I think actually the one other game I can think of that does that is Pinball FX. All their tables from the first game are compatible with the second table. You know, because Pinball FX, you know, does all the tables and they just have the same. So, I mean, that's the only one I can really think of is Pinball FX. The thing is that I am... Did you take the they had a survey a couple of weeks ago asking people what they would like to see in the next version of the game. So it's not exactly a secret. Mine was basically number one was being able to import my old songs that I have on my drive. Or actually, well, since it would be probably for next gen. But they have that all that information of what I purchased on their thing anyway. I mean, that's one of the good things
I
about...
I would imagine.
What? Yeah. That's one of the good things about achievements and save files is that they can easily read what I bought and what I had and what I played. So
they're watching you.
So I wouldn't mind, you know, spending...
See, people say that Big Brother, like, in a bad way.
Did you read about – well, Paul, they did talk about the Samsung smart TVs looking at you. Did you hear about that?
Okay, so the TV's looking at me.
Yeah.
If it gets its jolly seeing me in my underwear, then good for the TV.
Well,
somebody might as well enjoy the show.
I own a Samsung 4K smart TV, so I think I saw it winking at me once. Anyway, so, you know, I would pay like $10 or $15 just to be able to save all the trouble of having to do the song. And for me, it's not really the price of having to buy them again. It's just the convenience. You know, it's like, I don't want to deal with it. Just everything I bought, just give me back again. That's, you know, I don't care what it costs. I just want the convenience of having it again.
Sure.
Spoken like a true American consumer.
I have
loft
cables. I
don't care what it costs. Just make my life easier.
Right? But I also want to get it on sale.
Oh yeah, but I also want to get it on sale.
Yeah, Weezer and Tenacious D. I mean, I like Tenacious D. I mean, it's Jack Black, but Weezer, eh.
Weezer and Rock Band seem very synonymous. So there's been a lot of Weezer DLC through Rock Band's history. So that way it's a little fitting.
Maybe it's because you remember, Rock Band was not just harmonics; it was also co-produced by MTV, and that's where they got a lot of their music rights from, because MTV was getting them music, and also EA too. So it'll be interesting. They did pretty fine without MTV. I mean, Fantasia has a lot of good music on it as well. Ooh, I wonder if they'll allow you to import the Fantasia music into Rock Band 4. Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. You can take this, Hillary, and I'm getting tired of this story.
All right, you're sick of what is going to be the greatest game in the history of mankind?
For the
past, I don't understand.
How many years?
Sony appears to have, quote-unquote, abandoned its trademark for The Last Guardian. This comes from Destructoid. Waiting to finally see more of Sony's elusive The Last Guardian? You may be in for some disappointing news in the near future, as one eagle-eyed NeoGAF user discovered Sony has opted not to extend its trademark for The Last Guardian. I got to break in and say, I just wonder who's the guy who's sitting there every day going, I'm going to see if that trademark's still active. I'm going to see if that trademark's still active. And then he finally got it. He's like, it's not active anymore. I knew something was up.
Well, here's the thing. You know, a lot of people gaze at those trademarks because a lot of times you get the jump on new game news. Like they found out a lot of games were coming out because the trademark was registered first. I mean, that's the first thing they do is they have to register the trademark. So I guess just saw, oh, something's missing. Anyways, moving on.
Good for that eagle-eyed NeoGAFer. So according to the official listing that can be found here via the Office of Patent and Trademark in the United States, the trademark has been abandoned because no statement of use or extension request timely filed after notice of allowance was issued. It's important to note, however, Sony also did the same thing with its previous trademark for the same game before. But wait! Let's not forget that Sony just went and confirmed The Last Guardian was still in development as of last August. This abandonment could very well mean that Sony's simply gone with a new name for the game, or they're planning on something else they haven't quite yet shared.
Yeah, but the problem is that you've also had people leaving Team ICO, you know, and some of them are hanging around. Some of them just left. I mean, what's it, 7 years on this thing? And all we know is that we had a picture of Falcor's uglier brother. You know,
look, all I know is that Team ICO, they have a girlfriend in Canada. You wouldn't know her. Her name is The Last Guardian. You haven't met her.
You weren't around when she was visiting last time.
Yeah, she goes to a different high school. She used to be called The Last Guardian. She changed her name. It's a Canadian thing. You wouldn't understand. You Americans wouldn't understand.
Wait, Hillary, you're Canadian?
No, I was just speaking for Sony. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, we've had Canadians on in the past. It's shameful.
We have? Nobody told me.
Yeah, if I'd known that,
I would have stood for that.
Yeah, that's not acceptable.
We don't count as them Canadians where I'm from.
Was it Alan Thicke?
No.
But I remember when we had Alan Thicke on the show.
That was one of your peyote dreams, Paul. Anyways, the question has to be asked. Do you really care about The Last Guardian anymore?
Nope.
How about you, Hillary?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was it not my turn to answer?
No, you made it quite clear. No.
You're very succinct, Paul. I really appreciate that.
I try. I really do.
I care about all of the games, Jonah. Uh-huh. They matter. They all matter to me.
They're all your children.
There are some developers, though, where It's not. I mean, to me, I don't care if they ever make The Last Guardian or not. It's really just about, okay, these guys made a couple of really transcendent games.
Yeah.
So I want to see what they come with next. And I can't say to why it's taken them so long to get another one out there. I could care less if it's The Last Guardian or something else.
See, but that's the problem.
You kind of want
it?
Them to make another game.
That's the problem, isn't it? I mean,
well, whatever you do, don't ask Peter Molyneux. Jeez.
Well, actually, we're going to get to him a little bit later. But isn't that the problem, though? I mean, they're spending all this time on The Last Guardian and Team Ico, and the transcendent games that you're mentioning are Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. As a matter of fact, we did the game flashback last week for Shadow of the Colossus. At some point, you know, you have to learn how to cut bait, you know? I mean, some games can have the long development time. I'm looking at you, both Half-Life games. And some can't. And I'm looking at you, Duke Nukem Forever. You know, there's just some... I don't know. I mean, something tells me marketing's behind this. That they're saying, well, listen, we promised The Last Guardian. Everybody loved it at E3 2008 or whatever, whenever it debuted. You know, we got to get this thing out. And I don't... You know, you have to wonder if there's any... If there's any enthusiasm about the project. I mean, Paul, you're the game creator amongst us. Well, actually, technically Hillary is, because he worked on Chair as well. But just so you know, Hillary, Paul does work in the industry. Did you last work for Disney Interactive, Paul, or did you have another project after?
No, I'm currently doing freelance on an educational assignment. And before that, it was the Olympics. Before that, it was Disney. Before that, it was Warner Brothers.
Let me ask you a question. If development time takes too long, do you start to get less enthusiastic about the project?
I think everyone starts to get a little bit more stressed out as the development time wears on for a project.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if less enthusiastic is the right word.
But there is a negative.
Definitely like more stressed out.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is definitely a negative association going on there. The longer it takes for someone to finish a game.
Yeah. I mean, usually development time is like 18 months for a game. General
depends on the game.
I mean, but
depends
I mean,
on what you, depends on the size of your game.
For a for quote unquote AAA game, let's say 18 months. That's usually the turnaround time for it.
Don't start me down that road. We've all. Regular listeners of the show, no, don't start me down that road.
Hillary, Paul has a problem with day one patches.
That's not even the problem. That's not even the problem.
I don't think they should fix the games.
Do you want me to just start me riffing off so that the new guy can hate me like right off the bat?
Let's wait because, like I said, this is a running theme in this podcast. I think we're gonna move on to the next item, Final Fantasy. Episode Dusky demo details, and this comes from Eurogamer. The upcoming Final Fantasy 15 demo, subtitled Episode Dusky, will be available to play on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One from the day that accompanying game Final Fantasy Type-0 HD goes on sale. Download tokens will be included in the box of day one branded physical copies of Type-0 HD and bundled with digital copies, quote-unquote, for a limited time only, according to publisher Square Enix. The trial will include the region of Dusky to explore, one of the many areas that will be found in the final version of Final Fantasy XV, which lacks a release date itself. Quote-unquote, several hours of playtime will be included in the demo, along with, quote-unquote, plenty of hidden secrets. Download tokens will be redeemable from the 20th of March through for an entire year to the 20th of March 2016, and will be remain playable indefinitely. Timeout. Do you remember a time when demos didn't have an expiration date? I mean, as a matter of fact, you know, one of the things that I miss about Xbox Live Arcade is that everything had a demo, and now either you pay for a large demo, or the demo only lasts for a certain time, then it decides to run away, you know? Purchasing Final Fantasy Type-0 HD will be the only way to get a hold of the demo. Well, then it's not really a demo, is it? Anyway, Type-0 launched first for the PSP back in 2011. The new version boasts completely rejiggered visuals, but lacks the original game's multiplayer elements. So, Paul, you're the longtime Final Fantasy player.
Although I am the longtime Final Fantasy player. How nice of you to remember.
Did you play 13?
Did I play 13?
Yeah, that's the one with long corridors and nothing else.
Yes. Oh my god, I put it down.
So, I mean, you know,
that was a misfire for me, I got to say.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't play the next two games Apparently, from what I hear, they weren't exactly impressive. Although in the third one, they tried to make it a little bit more open world, but it failed there. How about you, Hillary? What are your do you have any expectations for Final Fantasy 15?
Well, I'm super confused because it's called Final Fantasy, but they keep coming out, and I don't know if they understand the term final.
Oh my God! Don't even get me started on the Neverending Story.
It gets even worse when they have Final Fantasy X Part 1, Final Fantasy X Part 2, Final Fantasy 13, Final Fantasy 13 2, and then Lightning Returns, Final Fantasy 13 3. You know,
it's true. I have not enjoyed a Final Fantasy probably since Final Fantasy 10. So, yeah, I'm the wrong person to ask. I have zero excitement.
Just so you know, that all agrees with you because the last Final Fantasy that he liked was 10 as well.
So you have good taste, Hillary.
I changed my answer then.
Infidel.
He just wants to be contrarian now.
Well, sounds like a particular Mr. Falcon that I know.
Well, you know. But the thing is that, you know, I have some mild interest. I did not like 14, you know, the MMO at all. Before and after was Reborn, you know. I don't know. I mean, see, unlike most people, I had not played Final Fantasy before 10. So I did not have Final Fantasy 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, you know, all those classic Final Fantasy. So most of my impressions have been from 10.
Well, that's because you're a terrible person, Jonah.
And just so you know, I did not play Fantasy Star, so it isn't like I have some sort of, you know, a fanboy intention. I don't know. I was not a Final Fantasy person. That's all. So, but I am interested. Look, I am sort of.
We all make poor choices in our lives, Jonah.
And you're just gonna have to live with yours.
Okay. So, Paul has found a new playmate to beat up on me. I mean, Jordan wasn't as obvious, but, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, I just had other RPGs on the mind. Anyways, so getting back to the topic at hand, you know, I'm sort of looking forward to Final Fantasy 15. I want to see what they do, because like I said, Final Fantasy 13, I remember that someone said, I think it was Yahtzee, said that, well, his friends told him that it really picked up in 30th hour. No, I am not sitting through 30 hours of running down a corridor just till things get interesting. I mean, the game, I didn't play the game. The game played me. That was the biggest crime, you know. It wasn't that it was linear. It was just that, you know, I really had nothing to do. The game sort of said, listen, I'll deal with the combat. You just sit there and press a button a couple of times, and I'll play it for you. I do not like that. I mean, did you have a problem with that, Paul? Did you? Because,
like I said, it was to me a complete fail from the word go. I mean, I didn't like the art style. I didn't like the way the controls were laid out. I didn't like the menus. I didn't like anything. There was nothing really after. I couldn't make it past 10 hours.
I couldn't get past the chocobo popping out of that black guy's afro.
But Tom, I don't know why I called you Tom. Paul, I have a question for you, Paul. It's because I saw this note that said Tom's Guide, and I was reading that. Paul, is it possible that you didn't like Final Fantasy 13 because you didn't take a nap before you played it? Because you sound a little cranky. And I feel like if you just got a little bit of sleep in before you played it, you might have approached it with a different mindset.
Actually, it was the opposite.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I mean, Final Fantasy 13 put me to sleep, so I got plenty of rest.
Final Fantasy 13 was some of the best sleep I ever got.
I think I only made it about an hour and a half in that game.
I shuffled through 2 hours, and then I learned that it doesn't really change until 25 to 30 hours in, and I said, I'm done. See, that's why I love Gamefly. I can just say, you know what? Pass. You can take this back. Thank you. Give me a new game, please.
See, that's why I don't buy anything retail unless I know it's good.
Or you can make your own game, Paul.
That's true. I have done that before, just made a game out of frustration.
You know, I just realized we didn't do the entire what have you been playing lately thing. We'll do it after the news instead.
Or how about what do you plan on playing?
Well,
what are you looking forward to playing this week?
Well, let's wait until we get past the news here. Okay.
And I'm just tossing out something different.
Next item. Go ahead, Paul.
NVIDIA's big March 3rd event. Is it a gaming phone? And this comes to us from Tom's Guide. After years of refining its graphics cards and first-party hardware, gaming chip maker NVIDIA could be getting ready to unleash its biggest product yet. The company has sent out invites for a March 3rd reveal event in San Francisco, during which NVIDIA will show off a product that's been in development for over 5 years. Titled, quote, Made to Game, NVIDIA's event invite mentions little more than a date and promises an announcement that will, quote, redefine the future of gaming. The company is expected to eventually relaunch its Shield tablet with NVIDIA's blazing new Tegra X1 processor, but we're not sure if an update to an existing product is the game changer NVIDIA is teasing. One possibility is that NVIDIA is prepping a game-focused handset for its X1 chip inside. Others have tried and failed at this concept. Remember the Xperia Play, but a
phablet. They're sort of mixing phone with tablet. They're sort of a portmanteau there.
A phone tablet that focuses on cutting-edge graphics could turn a lot of heads away from the Galaxy S6 and HTC One M9. NVIDIA could also be working on a full-on living room console, though the Shield tablet already serves that purpose when it's hooked up to a TV. The company may also be looking to enhance its Android-based Shield Portable, which originally launched in 2013, and picks a built-in controller and fold-open touch display. NVIDIA's March 3rd announcement will hit during the Game Developer Conference.
So
better known to those of us who attend as GDC.
I don't know. You know, I keep on meaning to get a Shield, but it's like maybe not. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people have. I mean, there are two handhelds right now, the 3DS and the Vita, and both of them starting to pick up steam. I don't see how a third handheld console will fit. I mean, that to me, it just screams the Atari Lynx to me.
Yeah, everyone's still trying to fight the iPhone.
That's true. I mean, a phablet. Hillary?
Jonah, stop making up words.
I did not make up that word. It was written there. Hillary?
Well, I'm offended by the word phablet. I think
we can all agree on our offense at Jonah's lame attempt.
And
I
want to tell my friends who are also offended by that word that had I known that word was going to be used on this podcast, I would not have appeared on here. It's very disgusting.
I'm with Hillary, except, you know, contractual obligations. Read the paper before you sign it.
So I would have to say, it just depends on what their angle is. I mean, if it is an actual phone that has some kind of hardcore gaming application to it, that's different than a DS or a PlayStation Portable, right? It's, you know, it's different than a Vita and all that because it's actually your phone. But it just depends. I think, honestly, that hardcore mobile gaming is overrated. I enjoy my DS, and it's great on plane rides and stuff like that. And I enjoy my PlayStation little portable and all of that. But to be honest, I play on my iPhone more than anything because I have to have my phone with it to begin with. And I think low engagement phone games might not be the thing that gets covered on a major gaming website, but that's the stuff that people play. That's, you know, you look at what are all the top games. I mean, to me, like Clash of Clans is a pretty light game compared to something you would play on your DS even. But that is making $1 billion a year. And the reason for it is because you want something that you can engage with for like a minute and do something else. And you can go on the toilet and play for a couple of minutes and disengage. And you can't do that with hardcore games. And so if they're just going to make something that is a hardcore game that I play on the shitter, it's going to be a fad, in my opinion.
Did you just say that you play on the shitter?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? I do major amounts of Marvel Puzzle Quest while I'm taking poops.
I was just wondering that if he had trouble disengaging from the toilet. See, that's what I took away from it.
If I sit too long on the toilet, it does become difficult to disengage.
Oh. And there goes the neighborhood.
Well, yeah. if it gets that far, so to speak. I don't know. I'm lukewarm. I mean, and I have to wonder if NVIDIA is probably going to go with the DirectX route, since Apple goes with iOS and Google goes with Android. So it'll be interesting. I mean, but Windows do Windows phones still exist? I mean, I'm pretty sure they do.
Is that still a thing? I don't think that's really a thing anymore.
I don't know. Anyway,
I don't think that means what you think it means.
They still exist.
Yeah.
I mean, if people.
I don't think exist means what you think it means.
I mean, I was gonna buy one a while ago because it meant I would get more achievements, but you know. Anyways, we're gonna move on to.
I love achievements for shopping.
I love getting achievements for YouTube. I have to go watch some YouTubes with less than 50 views to get the hipster achievement.
So, nice.
Anyways.
For what?
For the achievement, Paul.
On Xbox?
Xbox One. Yeah, that's an achievement on YouTube. You watch about an hour of video, or 1 or 2 hours of videos that have only less than 50 views because you're a hipster.
That's ridiculous.
That's kind of a noble achievement, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Hillary.
All righty. So, after raising $114,000 on Kickstarter, a dev has gone silent. This is from GameSpot. The Stomping Land, a planned multiplayer dinosaur survival game that raised $114,000 on Kickstarter, is now in a critical state, with its art lead quitting and its creator not responding to emails. In June 2013, the Stomping Land Kickstarter project managed to raise more than $114,000 from 4,400 backers, who are all now really pissed off, having initially only asked for $20,000. A year later, a first build of the project was published on Steam Early Access, and at that time, its lead developer, Alex Fundora, assured that even though the game is available, development is still in full force. However, this would mark the final update on the game's Kickstarter page. Now the game's lead artist has quit the project and says he hasn't been able to establish contact with Fundora in weeks. In-game model designer Vlad Constantino wrote on the Stomping Lands forums, quote, "More than a month has passed since the day when I received the last reply from Fundora. I've sent him 5 messages and I haven't gotten a single reply."
You know, just so you know, a name like Vlad Constantino, you expect him to be a Bond villain.
I know, right? Well, or Vlad a descendant of Dracula.
Yeah.
He seems like he should be a servant of Cthulhu. Constantino also claimed that Fundora... I like it because it's like Fundora just sounds like a fun time with a fedora. Fundora owes him money, and if this silence continues, I will stop my participation in TSL and start taking the necessary measures to cover my expenses. The message, first brought to light by PC Gamer, adds that Constantino is now working on a different project entirely. One backer, who said they had invested $90 in the Stomping Land, has informed Kickstarter of the issue, but the crowdfunding site could only offer an apology in return. It is not clear if Kickstarter can or will take further action. Well, Kickstarter will not take further
here's
action.
Here's the thing. Welcome to the world of investing. This is what happens when you invest in real life, kids. You know, the thing you invested in may not work out, you know. I mean, the person running away with the money may be illegal, but still, you know.
I lost a fortune when I was really young in my shares in Santa Claus, and that has not picked out at all.
Little note, I am one of the backers of the Stomping Land. But the thing is, I really didn't play it that much. I mean, there was an update like a couple of months ago. And I tried going in on a single player, and I got chomped by a dinosaur almost immediately. So I should have tried the multiplayer. I mean, it's still there on Steam. I haven't tried it lately, but maybe I will, just to see if there's a community on there of people who are playing simply because this is what they got, you know. Now, Paul... I know if you were Mr. Constantino there, you'd probably have steam coming out of your ears.
No, because it's activities like this which force me to take the stance of I'm not going to fund anybody's shit on Kickstarter anywhere, for any reason. Nope. Because 9 times out of 10, the project doesn't get finished, even if it does get funded, and then you're left sitting there with having made a donation and nothing to show for it.
Well, you know, Game Informer had this little thing about that people should have been alerted to something fishy here. Well, not fishy, but, you know, that Constantine, Mr. Fundora with his hat grossly misunderestimated what the budget would be. According to Game Informer, the $20,000 in backer funding would have had to, one, produce the game, two, create the Dinosaur Survival Guide, the official handbook of the Stomping Land, three, produce enough soft cover copies for backers at the $35 level or higher, four, produce enough hardcover copies for backers at the $400 level or higher, and five, ship those copies. So right there, Paul, as someone who's been on these sort of projects, you know that $20,000 ain't going to get you jack in that from that, you know.
Well, it's different if you say that this whole project will cost us $20,000, and if in your video you clearly say we're only $20,000 away from achieving all these goals.
Well, let's put it this way.
So if they're showing you a really slick video, and they're saying we only need this much more money to finish this game that we've already started.
I
think things like this give all of crowdfunding a bad name, and that there's more than a handful of hucksters out there who are just saying whatever they have to say to get people to part with their money, and then oops, we didn't finish.
Well, there was
my bad.
There was a lot of, the thing is that you have Tim Schafer, who has Double Fine Games, and his game is still not finished either. It was a year delayed before part one came out. And no one knows really when part two is coming out. I mean, I asked him personally, and, you know, he said it was coming. And, you know, I tend to believe him because he's Tim Schafer, you know. But, you know, you have to be careful about your budgeting, kids. I mean, even Tim had to put the game on Steam Early Access so as to get more funds than the, what, $2 million that he raised? And the thing is that part of it was that he was just going to document it. The real purpose of it was to make a documentary about the process of making games, you know. And the fact that he got so much money was unexpected, but still. Hillary?
Buyer beware, right? So here's the thing. Last time I checked, Broken Age still came out. I mean, at least the first part, that first you could part, actually yeah. buy it even if you weren't a Kickstarter backer. That this game, it came out on Steam Early Access, which means that you don't have to be a Kickstarter backer if you want it. Like, the games are going, especially like games that are going to be available on PC for download, you don't have to back it. If you don't want to take the risk, just wait. Honestly, I back a lot of Kickstarter stuff because I like helping people out, and I am okay. I like taking risks. That's why I, you know, walk around my house, you know, with my socks on, rubbing against the carpet, and I'll just touch myself to see if I can shock myself. I don't care. I'll live dangerously. I'm a madman. Paul, I don't care about the science. That's just what I do.
So you're just going to ignore the fact that that's not how that works?
You know,
that's what I said, Paul.
Like, okay.
I just think anybody who complains, it sucks. But hello, that's what you're doing. If you don't like it, just don't back anything. I back a lot of stuff, and I have to say, most of the extra stuff is all junk. I generally don't care. Or, you know, it gets thrown away or gets given away. Like, the extra stuff I get as being a backer usually doesn't matter. Maybe getting access to something early is kind of cool. But to be honest, you know, it's being part of the process and funding somebody, that's cool. The extra stuff you get, I don't think it really that matters. So if you're worried about it, just don't back. Otherwise, you know, you're giving your money away. There's no guarantee you're going to get the product that you're asking for. And shit be pricey. Like, making stuff is expensive. Like, that's just how it is. The reason why that artist didn't hear back from Fundora is because art's expensive, right? If I was gonna stop being able to pay somebody for anything, it would be the art, because art's pricey. Like, that's just, you know, things cost money.
And yet you'd be surprised how many people don't take that view. Oh, if I was gonna stop paying for something for somebody, it would be the art. Nope. Sorry.
Because that's Paul's usual.
No, that's so. excuse me, what was that, Jordan? Jonah?
Never mind.
Did you once again just demonstrate the fact that you have no idea what it is I do for a living?
I was teasing. I know that's what sets you off. I have to get a little revenge. Anyway, now
you're a small, petty man, and I don't know why I talk to you.
Anyway, you know, Peter Molyneux has been getting a lot of crap lately too over Goddess, because they had to
and rightfully so.
They had to remove, among other things, the multiplayer component, and the person who backed it for $90 was picked to be the god of gods. Well, guess what?
No, that was the kid who won the Curiosity Cube.
Okay.
He won that. He
won their previous game. He won a contest.
Right. So he was supposed to be the god of gods, and now he's not going to be able to have it because there is no multiplayer, you know. And, you know, I will say I also backed Goddess, but I haven't played it that much, you know. And, you know, when I back a lot of games, I'm more supporting the developer rather than wanting to play the game.
Yeah, but you know what? This is a 25-year veteran of the games industry. He should have known better. And then in an interview, he'll sit there and be like, oh, well, nobody can predict that they're going to go over budget.
Paul, it's talking about Peter Molyneux, he has a habit of over-promising. And as a matter of fact, there was this entire interview with one of his developers on what's like to work with Peter, you know. That, you know, he has a lot of big ideas, but he isn't able, and he also is very, it has to be this way and my way only, sort of.
I don't care if I was given an infinite budget, I would never, ever want to work with Peter Molyneux. Ever.
And this is coming by from someone whose favorite games include the Dungeon Master games.
It's true. That's absolutely true. I want to have nothing to do with that man.
But I'm going to say also, if he had an infinite budget, that game would never be finished. Because everybody would love to just keep spending and spending and make the most amazing game ever, and it would never be finished.
That's why I would go under a time constraint.
Yeah, it's just like
if I had infinite money and could, you know, assemble from the world's great of video game making, because I could pay them whatever they asked. Hmm.
But
you
know, if you,
like, I still wouldn't want Molyneux on my team.
It's like budgets create tough choices. And then you have to make decisions, and you have to scramble, and you have to think creatively about how to do things more efficiently, and it makes a better product. When you have unlimited time or unlimited resources, generally, like, it just becomes like a big blob that just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and messier and messier and messier. Doesn't mean that it makes it a better game.
Perhaps I'm phrasing this wrong. I think this one individual is a two-faced jerk, and no amount of money give me would want me to work with him.
You know, I'm still waiting for Milo and Kate, damn it. I want to play Milo and Kate. When is that coming out?
Yeah, I think at least it would have been nice if they had been a little bit more, I guess, cheeky with this kid who won this prize they can't deliver. Like, what if he turned on Goddess one day and there was just a message that said, regarding, you know, you becoming God of Gods, and they just said, sorry, kid, God is dead, and then the game just shut down.
Ouch. Yeah.
Oh, don't even get me started on that poor kid. And not even that, but all the people who microtransacted into that other game just to find out what was in the center of the cube. Don't feel like every single one of those 30,000 people or 300,000 people didn't feel ripped off.
Well,
I'm just so angry.
I mean, that's an ARG, though, to me. I mean, you know... I mean, I didn't feel ripped off in I Love Bees. Well, then again, I did get the DVD anyway. Like I said, I haven't played Goddess in a while. I'm gonna check out and see what's going on with it. You know, the reason I backed it is because I was hoping for a new version of Populous, which was one of my favorite games when I was growing up. So, anyways, final story. BioWare co-founder Greg Jeschuk has come back from retirement from Eurogamer. BioWare co-founder Dr. Greg Jeschuk has returned to the video games industry after he previously retired in order to pursue a career in beer journalism. And I'm going to stop right there. You know you have a lot of money when you can pursue a career in beer journalism. Beer journalism. You write about beers. I can't imagine that's a profitable job, except for the fact that beer makers send you beer.
But you also know that he didn't make enough money to become a blowjob journalist.
Oh, yeah, good call.
Yeah, so if they had done a little, if Mass Effect had sold a little bit better, he would have had a slightly different journalistic career.
Okay, moving on. Not only is not at BioWare.
Where do I sign up for that gig?
Okay. Oh, he's not.
Well, first you have to become rich.
Oh, dear. Well, first do Fleshlight journalism before you work up to that, you know. Anyway, only he's not.
Wait him as a joke train, Jonah.
Only he's not at BioWare or working on RPG. No, instead he's the chairman of a mobile game studio called Biba that seeks to integrate mobile technology with physical play. The Vancouver-based studio has recently partnered with PlayPower, a company that makes playground equipment. Quote, playgrounds are transformed into the wreckage of robot spacecrafts that have crashed on Earth, and players interact with their very own companion robot. which encourages the player to explore the playground through a whimsical eyes. The games marry a colorful interface intended to foster the imaginations of kids aged 3 to 9 with a unique embodied play game philosophy that encourages kids to actualize their gameplay with their bodies. Fun and age-appropriate physical challenges are reinforced through points, high scores, and badges that can be shared online with friends. As such, the focus is on quote-unquote referred play, that's misspelled, where the parents hold the mobile devices while their children complete the tasks assigned to them. Great. Parents are now quest givers, folks. I mean, are they going to have little question marks and exclamation points above their heads now? You know, back in September 2012, Zeshuk said, "I'm not going to be working in games for a while, and there's a strong possibility that I won't be back." Beeble will launch its playground-based apps later this year. You know, when I first read this article, all I can think of was, you know, when I was a kid, I used something I like to call an imagination to pretend that the playground was a wreckage, you know, star wreckage and all that stuff. I didn't need an app telling me what to do. But then I think, you know, these days, kids need a little more direction to have more structured play. I don't know. Paul?
Well, one could clearly here make the argument that, you know, in order to keep a population subservient, you want to prevent them from learning how to, you know, imagine a different life and keep them dependent on technology. But I won't be so gloomy and doomy as all that.
I don't know. I mean,
you just did that, Paul.
Is that what I did? Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I'll just embrace it.
I don't know. He seems to have the best intentions, though. Hillary?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a step down from blowjob journalism, but
step up from crack whore journalism.
I think that it's easy to go like, oh man, when I was a kid, I had an elementary school where on our playground we had a speedboat that was half buried in sand, and we would do like island adventure playouts, right? And
where did you grow up?
San Diego. Okay. We had an awesome playground in our elementary school, but
there must have been a story behind that wrecked speedboat.
Our playground stuff was all made out of concrete. It was a death trap. That was nice. Darwinism in the playground.
It's just rebars poking out. But
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Now, but we didn't have phones and shit, and so like right nowadays, it's hard to get a kid's face out of that screen. So I think that technology is something that they respond to. So I think the bigger thing is if you can just get kids to actually be outside again, that's probably a plus.
Kid, hell, it's hard to get my face out of that screen.
You know, the thing is that me and Paul...
It's hard to get my dick off of that screen, to be honest with you. I love humping my phone.
Wow. So...
They make attachments for that now.
The flesh phone? I mean...
Something like that.
But here's the thing is that, oh, God, you totally derailed my train of thought.
I did it. Yay.
Me and Paul had been discussing for the past few weeks, you know, with Amiibos and Disney's Infinity and all that, that, you know, the world of computers and the world of toys are really starting to merge now. It's something they were dreaming of. And I guess this is actually taking a leap forward in which you're taking computers and merging them with outdoor play. You know, Paul?
That would be kind of cool if you can get it to work successfully.
Although, you know what I played once and I want to play again? It's laser tag. You know, they still have laser tag too and laser tag arenas. I have to do that sometime. I mean, that's the adult version of doing this.
Laser tag is a metaphor for life.
Laser tag is also the pussy version of paintball.
That's, paintball, whatever. It's basically first-person shooter deathmatching on 3D planes.
Sure.
Anyways, so...
I will tell you right now, as a fair warning, I have played laser tag recently, and I will tell you it is the worst experience ever if there are little kids involved. Uh-oh. Because they ignore all of the rules, and they shoot low, and they're hard to hit because they're so tiny. So I'm just going to tell you right now, playing laser tag when there are kids around is a nightmare.
Well, you know, playing online
but you gotta be better
kids around
kids
is enough
is
of a problem anyway. So there you go. I mean, that's one reason why I don't multiplayer game anymore, because I don't want to play with kids.
I never multiplayer gamed.
Okay, Paul. Anyway.
Paul likes to do it solo.
So.
I have no idea what we're talking about anymore.
Before we do listener feedback, Paul, what have you been playing? Or what?
For the last 60 minutes, I've been playing Heyday on my new iPad.
Okay. Oh, you just bought an iPad?
No, someone gave me one.
Okay. Oh, how do you like your phablet?
Oh, no. I love my tablet. Okay. This thing doesn't make calls.
It could, by the way, Paul, if you have a Wi-Fi, if you have the 4G and you get the and you use Skype.
That sounds awfully complicated.
Okay. How about you, Hillary? What have you been playing that is not board game related?
I think the last thing I played through, I played through all 5 episodes of The Wolf Among Us, Ooh. The Telltale game.
So how'd you like the ending without giving it away? Because I played it as well.
Oh, I thought it was cool. It took me a minute to kind of go like, oh, okay, I get
yeah.
it.
because everything that happens in the last 2 minutes of that game changes the entire everything that happened before.
Yeah, it's and I'll say just for the game itself, I mean, obviously everybody loves The Walking Dead because it's incredibly intense and you get worried about getting killed and all that stuff. But I think this is a close second for their best game. I thought the story was good. I like Fable's the comic book that it's based off of to begin with. But I thought they did a good job with characterizing everybody. And I think that's their best job of doing quick time events. Mm-hmm. It felt really visceral. It felt fun. And it felt like it mattered. And I was engaged all the way through, you know, I mean, it's still a short experience. Like it's probably 6 hours when you just kind of burn through it, maybe 7, but it was definitely worth it. I really enjoyed it.
You know, I did not like The Walking Dead season 2 as much. Because there was a pattern established early in that, and I just, you know, okay, we're going to see almost everybody die, you know. And when you know everybody's going to die, it's hard to get invested in the characters. You know, at least in The Wolf Among Us, I was guessing a lot, you know. I did not know what was going to happen. In The Walking Dead, you know it's going to happen. It's that old thing in which, you know, whatever's the worst thing that could happen to this character right now, it will happen. You know, at least in The Walking Dead, there was some light at the end of the tunnel, basically. It was what I'm thinking of, you know. Or at least you didn't know who was going to die and who was going to survive and what was going to happen, you know. And I was able to get more invested in the characters, like Roy, Bigby, you know.
Have you read the comics, Jonah?
Actually, I bought the initial, on Comixology, you know, they actually have the Fables, and they have these little bundles in which you have the first 5 comics, the second. I bought the first bundle. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, though.
Okay, because so I've read all the books, so when I was playing it, I would have the exact opposite experience in that there were plenty of characters where I was like, well, I know nothing bad's going to happen to that character because the character's still around. The
character who seems to be dead at the end of episode 1, you know, if you read the comics, does not die, number 1, you know. So I already knew about that. I mean, you know, there are some characters who are dead after the, you know, who die after the game. So you're not quite sure if they're going to die or not in this game, you know. Like Colin, I mean, it's not a secret that he's dead in the Fables comics. So you know he's not going to die here. I mean, he might die here, but he doesn't. That's a spoiler, but, you know, it's such a minor character that really doesn't matter that much. Anyways, The Wolf Among Us. So did you come in, were you excited when it was announced that they were doing? I mean, there's some people who weren't really excited to hear about the Game of Thrones.
I was excited about The Wolf Among Us just because I thought it would be a cool thing to play a game based on Fables, but I wasn't hyped or looking forward to it. But, you know, it was like kind of one of those, yeah, what am I going to play this weekend kind of games? And I really enjoyed it. Game of Thrones, I think, is kind of – it's kind of like watching Better Call Saul, which is that it's cool because you've seen Breaking Bad, so you're like, I know these characters, and it's kind of – but at the same time, there's a lot of tension taken away because there's a scene in, I think, the first episode where somebody's threatening to cut off Saul's finger, and – you know the whole time he has a finger. He has all 10 digits in Breaking Bad, which comes afterwards. So it kills some of the tension. And I think Game of Thrones is the same way, where it's like they're talking about minor characters, a family that I think is kind of just mentioned among the litany of families and things that George R. R. Martin mentions in the books. And you know that they're not going to have any – they can't have any significant impact because – everything, it's not going to change what happens in the show or in the books. That stuff already happened. So I think it loses a lot of its potency. Like your choices, that you know that they don't matter because they're not going to be able to affect the book world that you've read. So I think it just kind of falls a little bit flat.
Did you see where George Martin said that the next series of books are going to be even bloodier and more people are going to die? That's sort of like saying, you know, if I'm going to put a lot more sugar in this coffee because it's not sweet enough. You know, it's like, we know people are going to die. You don't have to say that they're going to die, but saying there more of them are going to die, I don't know. It's sort of like he's like bragging that hey, you like that character? Guess what? He's not going to live.
So about like 4 or 5 years ago, I met George R. R. Martin at San Diego Comic-Con, and I was out having coffee on a patio with somebody, and we saw this guy walk by, and I swear to God, I was like, that is one of the best gnome cosplay costumes I've ever seen. And I literally thought that he was in costume. I didn't recognize him at first. And then I was staring at him like, wait, that guy is not in cosplay. That's George R. R. Martin just wandering around.
He was the runner-up for the George Martin lookalike contest.
No, it was true. It was truly him. He just he looks like he walked out of like a LARPing contest. But whenever he talks about all the weird shit he's going to do in the books, I just imagine him stroking his dick the whole time. I think there's got to be something a little bit disturbed with you to be that into being that
yourself.
Yeah.
Or at least being into watching people squirm. Like, sort of like, you know, I'm going to sort of like Gary Gygax with I forgot the name of it already. You know, the tomb. Tomb of Horrors, right? And the dungeon that was designed to kill people, you know, rather
efficient. Labyrinth of Madness.
No. It was a tomb of. No, it was a tomb. The Tomb of Terrors.
Okay.
And you know, like the disintegrating ball in the statue's mouth, that sort of thing. And it's sort of like, yeah, I want to see you die. You know, I want to see you get upset. I think that's how you're describing George Martin there, Hillary.
Yeah, he's a weirdo. But good for him. But I can't read the books, so.
I actually have a first edition of the first Game of Thrones that I actually haven't read from 1995, I believe it is.
Wow.
Yeah, one of these days I'll have to sell it.
I was still in grade school.
Yeah, and now Paul's bragging that he hasn't hit 30 yet.
God, Paul, everybody hates you.
I know.
You know, you don't know this, Paul, Hillary, but Paul wants hate mail. That's his thing. Because he figures
that was a shtick from 3 years ago, Jorna. Quit living in the past.
No, he figures if he gets hate mail, that means people care about what he's doing. So
living in the past, Jorna.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback from Alpha Shard. First, I'd like to offer some sincere condolences of the passing of Andrew. It was very sad to hear, just proof that life is very short. Now, he's referencing, of course, the fact that Andrew Yoon passed away 3 weeks ago, and he was actually a guest host on the episode, on episode 374, and he was going to be on again. Hillary, did you know Andrew Yoon?
Not very well.
Okay. At League of Legends, I read this story as well before it was on here, and I couldn't fathom why or how any LGBT would have any sort of advantage. Moreover, how anyone would know or why they would even care. The whole story was completely baffling. As for any slight advantage due to genders, there was a Mythbusters episode where they tested gender biases like throwing like a girl. First they had untrained kids pitch balls, then they had a pattern of boys throwing harder, faster, and girls being more accurate. And then when they brought in the professional players, they found differences very negligible. With training and practice, any weakness or disadvantage can be overcome. At Nintendo, lower prices? Yes, please. I'm all for cheaper games and also being able to get the backlog on DS that was on Wii. At EA Games, too hard to learn? I agree, Jonah. Read the manual, read forums, wiki guides, etc. There are a ton of resources. I have several good old games and Steam games that actually do have their manuals. As for EA Games, I have never found them hard to learn. Their games seem to be focusing on as being as streamlined as possible. By the way, I found my manual to Pharaoh, which is a 1999 game. I don't know if you've played that, Paul, but it is sort of a like Dungeon Master. Dungeon Lord, Dungeon Keeper in ancient Egypt, you know, except you're building the pyramids. I wonder if you'd like that. It's on Good Old Games. It's a 1999 game.
Probably not.
I also found it very odd, as Jonas says, that Grim Fandango isn't that much different aside from sound cues, and that it doesn't work for Paul. There's got to be a way to get that game to work.
He wants me to spend thousands of dollars upgrading my computer.
Let me ask you a question, Paul. Have you gotten a refund for it yet?
I have. So they would only provide me with store credit, and I'm going to end up disputing the charge with my credit card company because I've received no product or service from them.
Okay.
So they have no right to charge me.
So, Hillary, I don't know if you know this, but I was one or two people who actually bought Grim Fandango in 1998.
Me too. We're the two people.
I have you played Remastered?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so here's the thing. The only reason to buy Remastered is for director commentary. That's the only reason, because a lot of the sound cues and some of the stuff has been changed, not for the better, which shocked me, you know? I mean, and also the game doesn't look that much different. I mean, I guess the entire deal is that it can run on modern computers, but I got that software app that allows me to play it, you know, the original. And after I played it and listened to every single bit of director commentary, I basically uninstalled it off Steam, and I'm just going to play on the regular – whenever I want to play Grim Fandango, I'm just going to play my old version, which I have. So, yeah, I mean, the like I said, if you're interested in Grim Fandango Remastered, wait until it's like $2 on Steam and just listen to the director commentary and then see some of the odd choices that they make. Like, you remember when Olivia reads the Grim Fandango poem? Mm-hmm. In the original game, she's just standing there, right, on the stage, and she's reading it. And the music changes a little bit as well. In Remastered, when she starts reading, it puts her in a black room of nothingness, and the camera rotates around her like a Brian De Palma film. And doing that also exposes some of the stuff in the back that you never get to see, that sort of like, oh, this is the reason why you can't see the back of her in the game, right? So, yeah, that, like I said, it's the only reason to do it is to see the, is to get the, okay. So, anyways, moving on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
From Arthur the Fifth. First, I'd like to offer sincere condolences. Did I just read that?
No, that you haven't.
I'm sorry.
Andrew said
first,
that
I'd like to offer sincere condolences to the passing of Andrew. It was very sad to hear just proof that life is very short.
Oh, wait, you know what? Actually, that is. I'm sorry. Let me delete this. Go ahead.
See, that was not my fault, folks. from Arthur the Fifth, my condolences to friends and family of Andrew Yoon. It was a terrible misfortune to die so young, especially following completion of a project. He sounded like a real fun guy. At too much
cojones.
I don't think that's spelled how that is spelled on this paper. At too much cojones, I will now clean my eyes and read that again. Nope, it's still there. What part of human logic created the idea that if it's fucking League of Legends, not Olympics? If they are so afraid of superior mouse clicking ability, they should also ban Michael J. Fox due to his Parkinson's disease. Ouch. Oh, man. To be honest, I was always against esports. We are starting to forget that video games are a primary source of fun, not funding. But some people take it too seriously, resulting in those exiting propositions. If we could instead concentrate on banning antisocial twats from the gaming industry, that would be better. Oh, wait, no. There would still be no one to run. Then there would be no one to run the tournaments. At Nintendo's peasant strategy, as much as
yes,
I love
peasant strategy,
it says peasant. As much as I love Nintendo games, I hate paying for them. Well, here's the thing: if you don't pay for games, then people who make them can't feed themselves, and there won't be any more games. As much as I love playing Nintendo games, I hate paying for them. As opposed to Xbox PS titles, which gradually fall in price, a good Nintendo game stays. Staying the same price that for years in the UK. Yeah, it's true. Zelda never comes below $5, even used. They never get more than $5 cheaper. I am yet to find a copy of Lego City Undercover that won't bankrupt me. However, when they re-released the Metroid Prime trilogy for cheap, I snapped it up without a second thought. I would gladly pay for cheaper Nintendo software. At question of the week, Mirror's Edge is still a live ending. It's beautiful. That's it.
Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, in the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. Okay, and thanks for coming on this episode, Hillary. Hope to see you again in the future, maybe.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I mean, I don't know if I can trust that Paul guy, but yeah. I may come back.
Well, I wouldn't trust that Paul guy either. He sounds like a real douchebag.
So anyways, regardless, we'll see you next week. Paul, you're going to say something about buying bonds?
Well, you usually give a boilerplate, and then we say goodbye. This whole thing is throwing me off.
Oh, yeah. Well, just say your goodbyes, and we'll get out of here.
Buy bonds.
That was so,
it's good advice.
That was so flat, Paul.
Okay. Paul,
it's supposed
to
be
say...
flat. It's called delivery.
Yeah. Anyways.
Huh? It's not delivery. It's DiGiorno, Paul. And I have to say, Paul, if I was your Samsung TV, I might be a little bit bored watching you in your underwear. So maybe spice it up at home a little bit for the old TV.
Well, I mean, as long as it's going to sit there and watch me anyway, I might as well put on a show, right?
Exactly.
Okay, see you guys.
Dance.
What?